Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. Here on CJSF 90.1 FM, we're happy to be here with you this Monday morning. And we got a bunch of stuff lined up for you today. We're going to start off with a report about the new bookstore. And, well, not the bookstore isn't new, but it new is that they're also going to start publishing books down in New West, a report from Danny Nesver Vaderani. We have a conversation with Mayor Ken Sim of Vancouver, not about Vancouver politics. We know there was just, of course, a big by-election down in Vancouver, which brought in two people not from Ken Sim's party in a bit of a sweep. But no, we're going to talk to Ken Sim as part of a series we're doing of talking to regional mayors about what's important to their communities and their cities in the upcoming federal election. We're also going to be talking to Akira about SFU's Skodan Indigenous Film Festival, which is coming up this Friday. So we'll hear all about that. They got two programs, short films and long films, and we're going to hear all about that, which is pretty cool.
I'm going to be speaking about I'm just trying to get the right name. The MP that declined from the race, he already was an MP. Paul Chang, is that how you say it? He a bit of a background on the whole situation, because the controversy was that he said there was a conservative candidate, and he said, "Oh, turn him over to the mainland Chinese police," because supposedly we got a bunch of these Chinese police stations in Canada. Mm-hmm. And sort of my feeling is that if it wasn't for the tariffs, this would have meant the Conservatives would have won, because what happened was that Mark Carney said, "Oh, I accept his apology that I did the wrong thing." He did not ask him to resign. Mm-hmm. He resigned on his own.
Yeah.
And going to be bringing up a little bit about a Fifth Estate article that only happened, a year and a half ago, that was about a synopsis of what they were speaking about, and which wasn't that long ago, actually. So, in the context of what's going on, with the Liberals as such.
Great. That's coming up in the last 10 minutes of the show. And, of course, we also have Gardening with Embark. We're talking about growing potatoes this week in your garden. Mm. So, as I mentioned earlier, Vancouver had a civic by-election that seems to be quite significant. Two new members were elected to city council, both from progressive parties, in a bit of a landslide win. The third candidate was from the Team party, again, not an ABC party, and Mayor Ken Sim's ABC party was very low down on the ballot. Given that they've dominated the council for the last year and a half, nearly.
But they still have most of the councillors in Vancouver are of the ABC party, though.
It is true.
It is true. Isn't going to change what they want to do. What they want to do, they're going to do it until they get elected out or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. I guess where I was going was just that, you know, a sort of electoral snub like this does perhaps make them think about where they're going over the next 2 years until the next election.
Well, I don't know what they might
need to do if they want to continue in power after that. Maybe they want to get what they're doing done and they don't mind, but
yeah,
it's got to give them something to think about.
Maybe they won't think about anything.
Also in the news, of course, markets continue to tumble around the world in the wake of Donald Trump's latest round of tariffs against pretty much everybody in the world, announced on last Wednesday on April 2nd. Trump continues to double down on this policy, and we'll see where it all goes. Of course, it's important to note that stock markets aren't the economy itself, but they do somewhat indicate how people are feeling about where the economy is going.
Well, Howard Lutnick has basically rationalized why they said the penguins couldn't do trade, or they had that. There's these islands that only have penguins and seals. And I'm actually on my tablet, got the news feed here. Is that on those Sunday talk shows, the political Face the Nation, et cetera? Harold Lutnick, Secretary of Commerce, said, well, we had to do that because of loopholes. They could have, the Australians could have went to the Penguin Island and traded with, and so it closed the loophole. He doesn't want to admit it was kind of an error.
Some people are speculating that they made up the whole trade policy using an AI bot, like ChatGPT. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's certainly the chatter online.
Well, he's covering himself up. In fact, before Harold Lutnick became Secretary of Commerce, you go, all the senators kind of ask them questions and so on. And he, about like a month ago, said, oh, he's just doing these tariff threats about fentanyl, and that he supposedly understood that, you know, that the car parts had to have free movement and all that. Well, I think he, I don't know what the guy is kind of he's just, maybe he's going against his better judgment at this point.
Well, I think that's the thing that's got a lot of people worried, is nobody's quite sure what Trump is hoping, what's behind his thinking here. Does he's just confused? Does he not know? Is there some strategy? Is it just a bunch of BS?
Who knows? The thing about Harold Lutnick is not pushing back, because when I looked, there's about I didn't see all 3 hours. I just saw one little clip, and the senator was concerned. I said, well, you know that this is way before they were implemented or whatever. Yeah. And he sort of, if you hear it, Harold Lutnick made it like, oh, no, well, I understand that about car parts. Well, he supposedly does understand that about car parts now. You know, so it's almost like they're thinking, well, maybe he's right about something. Like Glenn Beck says, give him a chance. Yeah, give him a chance. we'll give Adolf Hitler a chance to take over the world.
Exactly. It's like, I mean, at the very least, he ought to be able to clearly articulate
what he's
doing. And he jumps all over the map every other day and every week.
Is this Harold Lutnick you speak of?
Well, I mean, Harold Lutnick, because it's Trump who's obviously, you know, running the show, and all his people need to try and just back up and support whatever he's saying. They don't actually push back against him.
Yeah.
I mean, that becomes obvious. Anyway, we got to get on with the show, otherwise we're not going to have time for all the bits we have. This is a report about a bookstore and a new publisher down in New Westminster.
Groovecap Books and Records is a community-used book and record shop in New Westminster, B.C., operated and owned by husband and wife duo John and Kathy Hughes, this bookstore has a bi-weekly book club, author talks, and musical sessions by local artists. One of Groovecat's stated goals is to foster community connection through stories and music. Their next venture to achieve this? Their very own publishing company. In late last year, December 2024, Groovecap Books and Records launched Cosmic Cranium, an independent publishing press which John Hughes has already used to launch his very own book, Dream Punk, A Nightscape. To find out more about Cosmic Cranium, CJSF took a trip down to Groovecap Books and Records, where we immediately found ourselves surrounded by used books, pieces of art, records, and the sounds of light jazz playing on vinyl. When we finally sat down with John Hughes, we asked him to provide an explanation for why Cosmic Cranium Publishing was launched in the first place.
So I was a sessional instructor for a couple of different post-secondary institutions, and I one morning woke up and was cursing at my computer at about 5:30 in the morning, and my wife said to me, "Is this really what you want to do with 15 years in university?" And I responded that no, it wasn't, and her suggestion was, well, let's do something a little more rewarding. So we picked a bookstore. And that went over pretty well in the community. So Groove Cat Books and Records, part of what we aim to do is make things groovier. If you've seen this town, there's not enough soul or groove going on here. There's a lot of concrete, steel condos, high-end dentist offices, and, you know, here's sort of upscale gyms in the ground floor and very little in the way of cultural representation. So we wanted to make things at least stick our noses in the area where we thought we could sort of contribute culturally. That's how Groove Cat Books and Records was born. I had a book that I'd been working on since my days at SFU in the School of Communication there, which had to do with my research on dreams. I had a bunch of almosts in publication. One guy actually suggested that he would pick it up, a guy in Columbus, Ohio, but also wanted me to pay for half of the publication costs. So I thought, okay, you know what? We've got Groove Cat Books and Records. Why not start a publication company? And hence, Cosmic Cranium Press was born.
We also asked Hughes if there were any other books in the works that Cosmic Cranium plans on publishing. Here's what he had to say to that.
Canada is not the 51st effing state, and it is going to be a collection of essays by everyday Canadians on not only that the fact remains Canada will never be the 51st state, but the reasons why people see it this way from personal perspective. And I've reached out in a lot of different directions, and we've got incredible response from veterans, from Indigenous writers, from LGBTQ authors, from doctors, farmers, people who do all sorts of jobs across this country. And these are the essays that are just starting to come in now. The deadline's still open, so if people are interested, hit us up at CosmicCraniumPress.com and look for submissions. And, you know, I mean, if you've got a great idea and the deadline's a little short, we can probably work with you on that. But it's definitely a counterpunch to Donald Trump's ridiculous idea of the 51st state. So we've seen the political response. This is a cultural counterpunch, shall we say.
Afterwards, we asked him to expand on some of the other types of books that he hopes Cosmic Cranium is able to publish.
So that's kind of the spirit of what we do at Cosmic Cranium Press. If there's a problem we don't know about yet, and we should be aware of, and there's ways that people can tackle it head on as individuals or as a community without deference to elites or really anybody who proclaims himself to be, you know, an expert in the field and isn't willing to work with people, then that's something that we would definitely look at. Also, stuff that is, you know, if there's a cultural or political horizon that is about to erupt, then people can research and write about that in a credible fashion. When I say credible, don't get your sources from internet conspiracy stuff. We're not interested at all. Research, you know, on the ground, talking to people, backed up by scholarly research at the same time. This is the kind of stuff that we're looking for. Or if your book just is a real out of left field complete dazzler that, you know, the writing is just so sparkling that we can't say no to, these are the kind of books that we're also interested in.
At the end of the interview, John Hughes left us with some advice that he has for anyone interested in owning their own bookstore or publishing company.
If you open a used bookstore, get a cat. We just lost ours, which is very sad. We will at some point get another, but it's a little raw right now. But get a cat in your bookstore. Very, very key. Connect with your community. Listen to people. Have local authors come in. Have local artists come in. Invite musicians, poets, anybody who wants to be part of the community. When people come in who are interested to hang out and look around, don't worry if they don't buy a book that day, or really ever. It's about community, okay? It's nice to keep the lights on, so if you can afford to buy a book, please do. If you can't, don't sweat it. From the publishing side of things, play your hunches. Go with your heart, but be smart about it, and work your connections. That's really all I have to say about that.
Once again, you were just listening to our conversation with John Hughes. one of the owners of Groovecat Books and Records, as well as Cosmic Cranium Press in New Westminster, BC. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative.
And thanks to Danny for that report. Joining us in the studio right here at CJSF is Akira Ayatel, and you're a curator with the upcoming Skoden Indigenous Film Festival.
Yes, thank you for
having me. Is Skoden the proper pronunciation?
Yes, Skoden. Okay. So Skoden, it kind of comes from, it originally means like, let's go then.
Yeah.
So Skoden, it's all about just honoring Indigenous peoples, and it was founded based on the principles of reconciliation. Originally, it was founded by one of the main curators, Carr Sapier. They're a Two-Spirit Wolastoqi filmmaker. They co-created the festival with Grace Matheson here at SFU. And now it's our seventh year. I'm honored to have been a part of it since 2021. First I was in the class, then the intern, a jury member, and yeah.
And you're still a student, but you've sort of been involved in sort of moving your way into more important and responsible roles with the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what's the festival about?
So this year we have two programs. We have a shorts program. It's family friendly. It's called Kinship. Yeah. And all of the programs just embody the feeling of community and connection and just hoping to share these teachings with the next generation. And then we have our feature presentation. It's a short program. We have one short film with Amanda Strong.
Yeah.
It's called Inquo for When the Starving Return. And then we have Jules Kustachin's new film, Nimisisak, sorry, my mispronunciation, Nimisak, Sisters in Film. And then we're also going to have a few Q&As. And we really just want to celebrate Indigenous filmmakers here in Canada and just pass it on to the next generation. And yeah.
So with this film festival, people can apply to be part of it. So what's sort of the scope of the draw for participation?
So previously we had it as a course at the School for Contemporary Arts.
Yeah.
Moving forward, it is a bit up in the air.
Yeah.
Hope we're trying to figure out the next year, but we are always wanting everyone to be a part of it. Skoden is for everyone. Every year that we've had both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had students from every faculty almost. They've been putting it on every year. But this year we've had to shift it around with just all the changes at SFU. And so it's me, Akira, and then we have Kathleen Mullen, and then Carr Sapier, and then our Skoden committee putting it on.
You three are the curators?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not just students who can apply to be part of it?
We do have like the Skoden committee who are all pretty much our family at the faculty for communication, arts and technology. They work their butts off every year to get Skoden to be where it is, and hopefully we can figure out the next coming years. We're really proud of Skoden, and it's really just about bringing both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people together. And this year we're also partnering with the First Nations, Métis, and Inuit Student Association. They're having their third annual Honoring Indigenous Students Powwow on April 12th, the day after ours. And yeah, we just wanted to build more connections across campuses and bring more people together.
Great. So this is happening this Friday, and it's a free festival.
Yes.
And it's happening at the Gordon and Leslie Diamond Center, and that's a theater right beside this building, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Right. So if you're listening at home, that's up here on the SFU campus, right in the middle of the campus near where you drive up. So if you're coming up here, it shouldn't be hard to find. What's the timing on Friday evening for the program?
Our doors will open at 5 p.m. and then the first program will start at 5:30. So in between that time, definitely recommend to come at 5. We're going to have some Indigenous vendors. There'll be some SFU students who are vending their Indigenous-made products. And then there'll also be some refreshments. And then we'll have our second program, the feature program, at 7:15 p.m. There'll be two Q&As, one with Dr. Lyanna Patrick. She's one of the filmmakers, a part of the shorts program. And then we'll have another Q&A with Jules Kustachin, who's a part of the feature program.
Right. So if people aren't able to make it up here by 5, they can still come up and join at 7:30?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Throughout the program?
Yeah, for sure. They can come 7:30. Honestly, I'm sure the doors will be open. And we always love people just coming in anytime. Yeah. They're also going to be available online for the weekend of... once the festival ends on the 11th, they'll be put online and they'll be up on our website until Sunday night, I believe, or Monday night, April 13th, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And how do people find that online?
They'll have to go to our Eventbrite. So check out our Skodan website and then there's a link to RSVP. And once they sign up for the Eventbrite, they'll also get a link to the films.
Great. So they can just sort of Google the Skodan Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's Skodan, S-K-O-D-E-N. I think if you Google that, you should it should come up in your top results and you can find out all the details. They do ask you to RSVP so they know how many are coming. Mm-hmm. But once again, the event is free. So once you've booked your spot, you're welcome to come. Can you get, just very quickly before we finish up, just tell us a bit about the films again?
Yeah, so we have the shorts program. It's called Kinship, and I believe we have about eight short films. They're all range from animated to live action, a couple documentaries. There's one film called Powwow Experience that we wanted to include in honor of the SFU Powwow. And then we have our feature presentation, Amanda Strong's amazing stop motion animated film. It is called Inquo for When the Starving Return. And then Jules Kustachin's documentary, Nimissak, Sisters in Film. It's an amazing documentary about Indigenous female filmmakers in the industry. And it also honors the iconic Alanis Obomsawin. Mm-hmm. I think everything is just such... They all share these amazing stories that everyone should come out and watch.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a fabulous program. Once again, this Friday evening at the Leslie and Gordon Diamond Family Auditorium up here on the SFU Burnaby campus. Program starts at 5 p.m. and runs till 9:30. First with the shorts program, then the features program, plus speakers. Sounds like a fabulous program. Thanks so much for coming up to tell us about it today, Akira.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Akira Ayatale of the Skodan Indigenous Film Festival. Sounds like a great program. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Do you want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
And next up we have Mayor Ken Sims talking about the federal election. Here at CJSF, we're doing a series of talking to regional mayors about what their concerns and what their hopes are from this federal election and what issues are most important for their communities. Jesse Wensloff talked to Mayor Ken Sim last week, and we'll be bringing you more mayors between now and the election.
I
Ahead of April 28th's federal election, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby is presenting a series of interviews with the mayors of the municipalities within British Columbia's Lower Mainland, giving them each a chance to share with our listeners what they see as the most important issues for residents of their cities, what they'd like to see from members of parliament elected within their municipality, and why this election is particularly important to their constituents. I'm Jesse Wensloff, and I met with Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim for the first of these interviews.
Yeah, sure. My name is Ken Sim, and I'm the current mayor of the city of Vancouver.
Thanks for joining me, Ken. Obviously, as you know, as our listeners know, there is a federal election coming up April 28th, and I want to know from you what you think, as the mayor of Vancouver, what you think are the most important issues for residents of Vancouver in this upcoming election.
Yeah, and I want to preface any of, comments that I have with the fact that as mayor of Vancouver, I have a fiduciary duty to make sure that we do not pick sides. We are not endorsing any one party, and we will be more than excited to work with whoever forms government in Ottawa, and we will be great partners with them. So if anyone construes this as an attack or an endorsement on any one party, very far from it. We are going to talk about, you know, data, items, whatever, and what's important to Vancouver. Oh, okay. So in a nutshell, there are a ton of things that we can use support on from the federal government. We've been pretty clear on the public safety and mental health side of things. There are a lot of things, a lot of challenges that we experience in the city of Vancouver. And the city of Vancouver is a metaphor for other cities, you know, medium and large cities across the country, because we're all dealing with the same issues. And so, the two big things, well, there's probably five, but the two big things when it comes to the mental health side of things is developing an integrated approach towards homelessness, mental health, and addictions. We can't look at this in a silo, and a lot of the times the city of Vancouver does not have the jurisdiction and or the resources to deal with this. We're looking for bail reform on repeat offenders, because, you know, we do have a lot of a lot of the challenges we see on our streets are, created by, a handful of individuals who, repeatedly have interactions with law enforcement. Sometimes, hundreds, like 400, 500, 600, 700 interactions. And at some point we need to identify this is a healthcare issue and treat it as such. Or the person could be just a jerk, and we should, I think we owe it to society to make sure that we don't have catch and release, and, we deal with it accordingly. The third thing is we need to secure our ports. Our ports aren't policed right now. And so it's, we have illegal drugs and weapons coming in, and we have cars and other illegally acquired goods going out. And so that serves as a root cause problem for a lot of the challenges we see on the street. And then finally, on the housing side, with our SROs, our single room occupancy rooms that, vulnerable populations live in, a lot of this stock is just falling apart. They're not livable. And we do need the federal government to step up and help us with funding, because the city of Vancouver, we don't have the financial resources to repair all these things. And finally, and this is a big general comment for the broader community, infrastructure. So as we know, we have housing attainability challenges throughout this country, including Vancouver, and we can do our part as a city to make it easier for home builders to build homes in the city of Vancouver, except for when it comes to the infrastructure, the plumbing. We have a $500 million a year deficit, and we can't fund that. And that will stop us from being able to build more homes faster. And so we need the federal government to help us fund these big capital investments.
With all of these issues, they are issues that get brought up at every level of politics, right? Municipal, provincial, and federal. And there's always a certain amount of
whose jurisdiction is it? How can we work together? Whose responsibility is this? How can the federal government do a better job of managing that process, in your opinion?
Well, there are some places where it's clearly federal jurisdiction. If we could, change the criminal code so there's, bail reform, we do it in a second. We don't want to ask the federal government, but we don't have jurisdiction over that. So though that's pretty clear, once again, and then the ports, that's a federal jurisdiction. So we have no control over it. When it comes to infrastructure, now we're talking about a gray area. I guess technically the city of Vancouver would be in charge of, depending on the situation, but most likely the city is responsible for that investment. And we wouldn't need a lot of that investment if it wasn't for some of the actions. And I'm not being critical of the actions. I actually support a lot of these actions. But through the actions of, let's say, the federal government on immigration, guess what? We need homes for people to be able to live. We need to build more. And by the way, I'm a supporter of smart education or immigration in general. The demographics of our country are not sustainable. You know, you look at Vancouver, by 2030, one out of four people will be over the age of 65. So if we want to have a vibrant society, we need to continue on with the tradition of Canadians being, a place where immigrants come, including my parents as well. So this is not an anti-immigration thing. This is, look, we're trying to solve challenges. The federal government, they have initiatives which we support. We just need, additional support to make sure that those initiatives are successful.
I just want to circle back to the port security thing. When you say that the ports aren't policed, do you mean there is no oversight, there's no sort of security, or is it like a police presence specifically?
We need port police. There are no port police right now. So, and the city of Vancouver, doesn't have jurisdiction per se. Now, obviously, we have an integrated approach, and the VPD supports, we go in there, but it's not as, effective as it could be, and the reality is we're not checking the vast majority of the containers that go through our ports. Like, I think the number is well below 1%. So I don't know, that's a pretty ripe environment for, the transport of illegal goods and activities, and we see it on our streets.
One thing that you haven't directly mentioned, but I think a lot of things play into and that is going to be on a lot of voters' mind, is the situation south of the border and the relationship with the United States and how all of that works. Do you see that as particularly important or relevant to voters in Vancouver?
Well, if they're using it as a city of Vancouver a determinant how people vote. I don't see it it's probably a bigger issue on the federal level. Now, at the city of Vancouver, what we've done, and this is a joint council thing, so I don't want to get political here, we're all proud Canadians, and I think we step above that when people take shots at us as Canadians. We all stick together, and so we're doing everything we can to take this crisis that saying, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We're not wasting this one, and look, we can't control what the President of the United States does or does not do, but we can control how we react to it. And so we're putting together a task force on this, and we've already identified a bunch of things that we want to do as a city to make it easier for businesses to succeed during these challenging times. And so, we're on it. And I think, look, I want to acknowledge the fact that a lot of people are freaking out, and rightfully so. We're, at the margin, right? It doesn't take a lot for people to really suffer. And so we understand it. We understand that feeling, and we're all in this together. I also think that you'll see places where even if government is slow to react to this stuff, we're going to see some positive pickup. For example, Canadians are now reconsidering their plans to travel in the United States. So they either go somewhere else, which it is what it is, or they stay local. This is good for restaurants or hospitality industry. When people are buying local goods, it helps with local businesses. The Americans, it doesn't seem like they've stopped coming up here. And, for exchange rate reasons, Vancouver is a lot more affordable. And so all of a sudden you have a situation where this could be good. Like, and by the way, I'm not trying to take away from the situation we're in. But we have a situation where it might actually, this might be a net positive for the hospitality and tourism industry in Vancouver. It also helps us, from a longer term perspective to, really reassess how we do things, and it opens up opportunities. For example, we're revisiting, the inter-provincial trade barriers, which I find absolutely crazy. It doesn't make any sense. It's easier to do trade with the U.S. than it is Alberta. Like, think about that. How crazy is that? But also in the city of Vancouver, like the Lower Mainland, we have a bunch of trade barriers within our city. And so, like the greater area. So let's take this as an opportunity to get rid of all the dumb stuff. Like if you're like a trade working on installing, let's say, alarm systems, why do you have to pull a permit in Vancouver and a different one in Burnaby, right? Or get a license to operate? It should just be one blanket license, which will make it easier for all our businesses, which will, promote prosperity and opportunity.
Stepping back from specific policy issues, what would you like to see from your city's members of parliament?
I actually think our members of parliament serve us quite well, regardless of a political party. And, I'm really thankful because it's a thankless job and they have to fly to Ottawa and it wreaks havoc on, family life and what have you. So I'm really thankful for it. And it doesn't matter which party. I wish, let's just call it what it is, the power base in Eastern Canada, I wish they would listen to the West, right? We don't represent a big voting bloc to them. They're more concerned about what's happening in the GTA and Quebec. And I don't think that's fairly productive. You have politicians. And by the way, I think as voters, we create this situation. So where the root cause of the problem. I wish we had more elected officials that looked at doing what was right versus politicians who were counting votes. And for our country to be prosperous, we need a very strong West. We are the gateway to Asia. We are in the same time zone as most of the companies that are transforming the planet, being on the West Coast. And so, when we look at Vancouver as the port, we're not the port of Vancouver. We're the port for Western Canada. Stuff that gets shipped out of, Saskatchewan actually goes through the port of Vancouver. We're their port. And so getting the attention from the federal levels of government from a Western perspective would be great.
Great. And just to wrap up, why is this election particularly important for voters in Vancouver?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. So from a Vancouver perspective, one of our big focuses is to solve the downtown east side. And look, I do want to say it's highly unlikely that we solve it 100%, but we want to make the area better. And with the perspective of coming at it from a place of compassion and love and caring, and that's what we intend to do. The first part of the solution the initiative was to stabilize that street by removing, unsafe structures that pose a danger to public safety, but also, finding people shelter space who needed it and, cleaning up the parks again. And so we've done that. And we've gone after organized crime as well, the people that are actually preying on our most vulnerable populations, people with mental health issues or significant substance use disorders. We're not going you know, we're trying to support them by going after organized crime. So we've done that. One of the big things that I mentioned is we need support on bail reform for repeat offenders. For a lot of the efforts we're doing on public safety, it doesn't solve anything. And then the support on mental health, healthcare, which is the root cause of 99.9% of these challenges. If the federal government doesn't support us, we're not going to solve anything. And so, this election is really important. We need whoever's in Victoria or Ottawa to really step up. And that's the pressure that we'll put on all political parties who want to represent this country. That's what we need.
Great. Thank you for your time. And it was great to chat with you.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the opportunity. You know, it's great meeting you.
Great. That was my interview with Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim, giving his thoughts on the upcoming federal election, April 28th. Stay tuned to CJSF for future interviews with other mayors from around British Columbia's Lower Mainland as part of our election coverage. This interview was made possible by support from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this story and others from across the country at frequencynews.ca.
It is time for Gardening with Embark, and joining me in the studio here is our resident gardening expert, Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability Society.
Hi, nice to be here.
Glad to have you here. We're getting into week 14.
Correct. And it's turning to be warm and nice and sunny.
Excellent. Yeah, we've had a few days of cool weather, but it's getting a little warmer. And so what do we want to be getting in the ground?
Well, as the days grow, expand, we can have more daylight, and the temperature increases, it's time to start thinking of planting potatoes, our early potatoes. Mm-hmm. So by June, we can have our first harvest with potatoes. So for all those out there that like to grow potatoes, this is the time to put potatoes in the ground.
Great. So what are things we need to think about? I mean, there are a lot of different varieties of potatoes.
Oh, yeah. So from its origins itself, there's more than 4,000 varieties of potatoes. And the ones that have developed here in Canada, they are specific for a short growing season, 6-7 months. And so there is quite a lot of varieties in the garden centers. The thing that we have to take in account is how we are going to grow them, depending on the space that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a garden bed, an in-ground plot, or a small patio with containers, so all of them will require a different variety.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that tomatoes, they have two types of varieties, mm-hmm. depending on the way how they grow, indeterminate and determinate plants. Determinate plants grow to a certain size. Indeterminate plants, they keep growing and growing and growing and get out of control if
right,
you have one more plant.
Vines, and you got to have a cage and support it and step up.
Yeah, correct. So those are keep growing and growing mm-hmm. while the determinate reach certain size and they stay like that.
Yeah.
With potatoes, we don't see that because potatoes grow in the ground.
Right, but they have the same distinction.
The same distinction. So yeah. There are plants that grow to same size. The determinate plants grow to same size. However, the potatoes are all growing in one layer mm-hmm. underground.
Right.
Okay. And with the indeterminate plants, the plant grows, and if we add more soil or heal up soil around the stems,
mm-hmm.
from those stems shoots will pop up.
Right.
And at the end of each root, each root, we have a tuber, a new potato. So the more we pile up soil around the plant, the more roots, the more potatoes. So these potatoes grow in different layers,
Layers. So as the plant grows, you pile up plant or soil against it.
Yes.
And then it just starts putting out new roots from the stalk.
Yes, from the stalk, yeah.
And then you just sort of keep doing that.
Yes, keep doing that. So we will have potatoes from the very bottom where you put the seed potato all the way until there is soil.
Right. The determinant types of potato, they won't do that. They grow to a certain height, and if you keep piling soil up,
there was nothing. You will have your potatoes underneath a large pile of soil. So, considering that, is how we need to select our potatoes if we are going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I'm growing in containers, I will use an indeterminate type of potato. So if I put my seed potato at the bottom of the container, shoots and stalks come, you keep piling soil, more roots, more potatoes, and as you fill the container, have all potatoes inside
all the way
the container.
Down to the bottom.
But if you use a determinated one, you will put your seed potato at the bottom and will be only one layer of potatoes.
With a lot of dirt on top.
Correct. And that comes when you have to harvest, when you are harvesting, and you realize, like, why am I not having potatoes? Why is there so few potatoes? It's because we have used the wrong variety.
So it's important to figure out what you're working with.
Correct. Yeah. So the seed houses, they market the early potatoes, so there will be the determinate potatoes as early, so only one layer.
Yeah.
And the late potatoes, or late season, as they call, that will be the indeterminate potatoes. Try to keep it clear. So sometimes they are the same name for the...
They're just all early potatoes.
Yes. So we try to, the advice will be to grow your potatoes in the both systems and see which one it is, and it produces more potatoes.
Right.
For I like to have the early potatoes, like a Warba or Yukon Gold, which grows are determinate potatoes, to grow in garden beds, in raised garden beds, because I don't have to empty the garden bed, so empty the soil to put my seed potato. And as the plant grows, keep topping up.
Yeah.
And later I had to dig up again the soil for harvesting. So having all these potatoes at the same level, in one uniform layer, is easy for us just to harvest, dig.
Right.
Yeah. So that's...
And that makes sense when you have more room.
Yeah. If you have more room, I think for raised beds and community gardens, early potatoes is the best.
Yeah.
And for containers or potato bags, we can use the indeterminates, so we make sure that vertically we have lots of potatoes.
With the indeterminates, there's some different ways you can approach it in terms of, I guess, making it sort of easier on yourself, but also maxing out what you can do.
Yes. So it's all about how much effort you want to put. As I say, if you go indeterminate in a garden, in a raised garden bed, you will have to dig out the soil.
Yeah.
And top it up fill it up as the plant grows, but at the end of the day, when you have to harvest, you have to dig it up very deep, because where the potatoes are.
Yeah, but you're going to get a lot of potatoes.
You will get lots of potatoes, indeed. And that is the satisfying thing, that they get in contact with the soil and start digging the potatoes, looking for that treasure that is in there. That's more exciting.
Right. So what are the different varieties of each type, so people kind of know what they're looking for.
Yeah, so for instance, if you are for a determined kind of potato, we have the Yukon Gold, the Norland, the Fingerling, the Russet Norcota, Viking, and the Warba, which is pretty much common in our garden centers. If you're looking for an indeterminate, so ones that you are going to grow well in containers and in potato bags, you look for the Russet Burbank, Da Vinci, Banana, and Nicola. These are the ones that I have come. Of course, you can have more varieties, and if you get hands on a variety that you don't know which way it goes, just use both systems and
see what happens.
Yeah.
And then you'll know for the future.
That's right. We use potatoes, which called seed potato.
Yeah.
So that's the way we plant. We don't use proper seeds.
Right.
Which is called potato seed. So the proper seeds is called potato seeds. Seed potato means it's just a tuber from the last year harvest. So when you are ordering potatoes, you have to be careful what you are ordering.
Right.
There are the mistakes that you say, potato seeds, and what you get is tiny little seeds.
Yeah, you get really different results starting from the seeds. It's not like other plants.
No, it's a very different result, because you don't know what variety is, how it looks, and it will take you quite a while. So the first year you will put the seeds, and a plant will grow, and new tubers will grow up, and from those tubers will be different size, big ones, and then you have to have those tubers. And for the next season, you have to plant those tubers. So it's one season, second year, and for a third year to have a harvest. So quite slow.
So it's quite a process. It's, you know, you're not going to get a crop this season if potato seeds.
Yeah.
You're going to be working at it for a few years before you get started. Yeah. Alternatively, with seed potatoes.
Correct.
That's where things are going to happen right away for you, and that's what you want.
Correct, yes. Yeah, so seed potatoes, if you have a potato in your hand, those potatoes have dimples, which we call eyes.
Yep.
And from those potato eyes, we will have a shoot, which is from which we have stems and roots coming. So a potato can have 5 to 8 different eyes, so all shoots coming from there.
Do you recommend getting seed potatoes, or because you can just take your potatoes if you still have them and use that to plant? Is there different results you get from that?
Oh, that's a good question. We tend to get potatoes which has been ensured that they are healthy, not with viruses, and they've been treated for storage. But now and then, we forget our potatoes at the bottom of the cupboard. And when we find out, they are with white shoots ready to...
Yep, I've seen that.
Why not to plant? So there is a potato, is a seed. So we just plant it and see what happens. It's a good experience as well, that.
Excellent. Well, now we're getting the plants in the ground. We also need to be taking care of them properly and watering properly.
Correct. So watering, that's a very... tricky thing with potatoes. One thing that we encourage here to our gardeners in this field is you water the soil, not the plant.
Right.
Most of the TV advertisement is you see people watering, spraying the leaves of the plant. Unfortunately, the leaves don't take water. The roots are the ones that need water.
Mm-hmm.
So we water the soil and try to keep the leaves of the plants dry. And particularly with potatoes and tomatoes and all the summer crops, because all of them have tiny little hairs. The leaves are covered with tiny little hairs.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a close look at potatoes, tomatoes, corn, beans, they all have little hairs.
Right, and that traps the water.
We'll trap the water. Indeed, if you just spray, they will trap the water. On the contrary, if you see the cold plants like cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, the water just slides.
They
don't retain. So high humidity and high temperature, which is coming over the summer, a nice environment for bacteria and fungi to grow. So you don't want to provide that environment for diseases to show up in your crop. So keep the leaves dry, but the soil moist.
Excellent. Well, that's some really good advice for people starting off their potatoes this season. So you got to be paying attention to whether they're determinate or indeterminate types, so you know what to do with them.
Yes.
Once you got them in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And how easy is it to know that?
Ooh. that's not so easy. As I mentioned, the seed companies, they just market as early mid-season and late season. So the early season, certainly they are the determinate plants.
Right.
Or determinate types.
And as you also said, try both approaches.
Correct.
And see what you're getting.
Yeah. Yeah, try both approaches and see what comes. And, do a little bit of Googling. Always there is some information there, and people's happy to share.
And imagine if you're trying it out, you know, you can kind of check after a little while. You're not waiting until harvest time. You can pile some more dirt, see what happens. You know, gently dig down a bit and see whether things are happening or not.
Yes.
And if it's indeterminate, you're going to start seeing more roots coming out and whatnot, and ultimately some potatoes on the end. And if you're not, you're just going to see a stalk sitting there with dirt. Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today, Pablo.
Well, it's nice to be here to share some of our experiences.
Pablo Vimes of Embark Sustainability. He's the gardening manager for Embark and our expert here at CJSF on your gardens. How do people find out more about Embark?
Oh, yes, you can visit our studio, our offices are located in the Student Union building, the first floor, or you can follow us through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks to Pablo Vimes for coming in and talking to us about gardens again this week. Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 5 minutes or so, but before we get to that, we got Peter R.H. What are you talking to? talking to us about this week,
Peter. Well, we had a liberal, and he was an acting MP, and he was going for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on their social media, have Paul Chang, I think that's how you pronounce it.
They've actually had a lot of candidates drop out so far this election.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was for not the same reason why Paul Chang decided to drop out. So what it
tell
was,
us about it.
Well, what it was that there's a conservative, T-E-Y, and he has been targeted by the Hong Kong police for allegedly breaking the city's national security law here in Canada. Now, this has been talked about for a while, that we have the mainland Chinese police station, supposedly. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Fifth Estate did something, not so much about that, but about how the Canadian government has been at times colluding with the mainland Chinese government. Now, what happened was that he actually, on their social media, this who's, I guess, still an MP until somebody else gets his seat.
But no longer a candidate.
Yeah, no longer a candidate. He said, this guy, why don't you go over to the police? They're acting, have a reward of whatever it was, $10,000, $100,000. And in my opinion, what Mark Carney sort of said, you're out immediately. He said, I accept the man's apology, and that's okay. And he actually, I say, if it wasn't for the tariff problem, the Conservatives would have won the election on this thing, because Mark Carney should have said, no, you're out. He said, I accept his apology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to do a little editorialization. Usually I try to go with the facts, but I'm going to do a little editorialization. So Trump is like fascism, like he's Adolf Hitler. The general kind of internationalism was the people's the World Economic Forum, which Mark Carney was, which the MP for SFU, Terry Beach, was educated there, and he was advertising it. That's sort of like Stalin, I guess. It's the international kind of thing. So we're fighting Hitler right now. I guess we have to collaborate a little bit with this internationalism, mm-hmm. which is not so great anyway. I mean, that was sort of like the, you know, like the what they call the conspiracy stuff. I mean, a lot of it is sort of a bit not quite what the reality is. It's sort of like, I don't think a one-world government's ever going to be implemented, but there has been serious globalism over the years. But then it's interesting that Trump is the one that's sort of countering it. But he's countering it sort of not in a very good way, is he? Now, interesting, it's been a while since I checked out InfoWars, and I checked it out about a month ago. And Alex Jones is just so happy about the concept of Canada being taken over by the United States. Now, what's sort of interesting is he kept saying, the internationalists are taking a takeover our sovereign nations. But now he is happy about the United States taking us over. So, I mean, that's not very good, is it, Alex?
Well, I think that represents a lot of the, you know, I mean, a lot of what guys like Alex Jones do is just, they're basically just trolling. They're trying to rile people up. So they don't really need to be consistent because they just need to play to people's worst
aspect.
They
actually believe that garbage. You see, he is believing it. See, that's the issue. And the thing was, I thought to myself, well, you know, I'm sort of in his camp a little bit, like, but it's not quite how he makes it out to be. It's interesting that, I mean, it's sort of interesting. It could be that if the United States totally isolates himself from everybody, then the internationalism, which will exclude the United States, which maybe that'll be kind of a one-world government excluding the United States, will all be part of that kind of a donut hole. Kind of a thing, but
well, you know, at least on a trade basis, that might happen. Back to the candidates, though. As I was saying, there's been a lot of candidates have been dropped in this election. I don't know if more than previous, and that'd be interesting to look into. But it does seem to be that if pretty much anything in your past, a little bit controversial, comes up, people get dropped. And I think partly that's because it's so hard to, it's so easy to make hay out of things like that, and very hard, very difficult to defend against them. There's, so, and I think campaigns just go, forget it. We're not going to even allow these distractions to be part of it. Like, bang, you're gone, and we stay on message.
Yes, and the show's just about over.
And I guess the very quick point is that, you know, I think perhaps the lesson that all the campaigns have taken from Mark Carney's initial response, or his response, was that you just allow that story to continue living if you don't snuff it out right away when a candidate gets in trouble like that.
But I guess, I mean, as I said, in previous elections, the Liberals would have lost, but people feel that Mark Carney has the background, maybe, right. which may be correct.
That's it. Democracy Now! Is up next.
Okay. Hi, I'm